All right, I'm live. All right. Hi, everybody. Howdy, everyone. Jimmy Song here. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Tech Talk Q&A. This week, we're going to talk a lot about 2019 and what happened. And yeah, we're going to go through Jameson's posts and stuff like that. But before I do, let me go and tell you about some of the other stuff that is going on. And, you know, so we give people a chance to get into the stream and so on. As always, my newsletter, Bitcoin Tech Talk, comes out every Monday, and you can subscribe to it in the show notes, and you can take a look at it, and I'll go through all of that. I'll also go through my tweets from the past week. For some reason, last week's video didn't upload to YouTube, despite me having done everything the right way, and a bunch of you were already on the stream. Somehow, it didn't get recorded, so it's unfortunate, but that episode is lost forever. But yeah, let me show a couple of my things. There is Programming Bitcoin. It's a book from O'Reilly that I wrote. You can buy it on Amazon for $41. It has 35 reviews with an average rating of somewhere around 4.6. So pretty good rating, if I do say so myself. All right, and of course, there's the other book that I've written with seven other co-authors. It is The Little Bitcoin Book, and it is available on paperback for $11.39 and also available on audiobook. This book also gets a lot of very good ratings. I think this one is currently at 5 out of 5. I don't think there's I think there's like one review that's 4-star, something like that. So pretty good. In addition to that, I have the Programming Blockchain Seminar coming up in Las Vegas, February 20th and 21st. If you do want to learn Bitcoin from me, you are going to have to, you know, use that opportunity. I will have scholarships available, and I will put something out in a couple of weeks or so. All right, so that's all of the stuff that I'm shilling. I mean, it is during Unconfiscatable. I'll go over that later and so on. But let's get to the stories. All right, Bitcoin Tech Talk issue number 170. Hit that like and subscribe button if you haven't. So this is the story that I am going to take a look at. It's a fairly long one, but Jameson went through all of the different stats that he keeps track of as part of Satoshi. And, you know, just sort of did a year-end review. We'll sort of go through that in a bit. That'll be my long read today. All right, this one is, believe it or not, an even longer article from Ben Kaufman. It's Bending Bitcoin, the Principle of Hard Money. So he's talking about Bitcoin from a hard money perspective, which I think is probably the thing that most people just don't get, which sadly is more prevalent in Silicon Valley than in Jakarta or something like that. People get that it's hard money almost right away if you go to a third world country. For some reason, VCs in Silicon Valley, they have a hard time understanding, you know, why hard money is valuable, whereas, you know, people like outside of Silicon Valley, they have a very easy time understanding it. Anyway, it's a very, very long article, but a pretty good read. I encourage you to read it and understand it. It really is a very good article. All right, so that was Bending Bitcoin. 2020, the year of PSBT. If you don't know what PSBT is, that is the year of, you know, partially signed Bitcoin transactions. And these are very useful, and I've been studying it. I've written a whole library around it and so on, to make it so that you could do multi-sig and offline transactions in sort of a systematic way, which I think is right. And, you know, it's fairly quick post, but I think there's a lot of truth to this post. Encourage you to take a look at that as well. All right, the gates of Bitcoin. This is another post from Bitcoin Analog, John Carvalho. And he posted this, I think, basically yesterday. Yeah, so, you know, this is, I think, kind of like sub-tweeting or sub-blogging, you know, Nakamoto.com and all of the stuff that came with that. And he's talking about the gates of Bitcoin. Like, how do you get in good with the Bitcoin crowd is what he's talking about. And he basically makes the argument, there are no gates of Bitcoin. It's a decentralized network. You can do what you want, but you can't force people to come along. And this is, you know, like people like Roger Ver are on the site, so there's been kind of a giant uproar about Nakamoto.com, and rightly so, because I mean, Roger Ver is definitely not pro BTC, but that's what it's proclaiming. So anyway, an interesting read, and I like this idea of a grandma's razor, is the principle that states that all progress has a cutting edge where the highest entropy change is happening. This innovation happens when the razor meets your grandmother's wrinkly skin, but she is too old and too slow and too behind the times to possibly use it safely or willingly. The grandma's razor's fallacy is the belief that an elitist culture must exist around the new technology to protect people from themselves. And this is, I've never heard the term, but it makes total sense. And it is the reason why so many governments kind of pass laws to protect you against yourself. Among others are like drug laws, for example, and things like that, and controlled substances. But yeah, very good read. Encourage you to take a look at it as well. Okay, gradually then suddenly is now on NakamotoInstitute.org, and this is the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, and all 11 are published there. And very excited about this. If you haven't read this, this is an excellent sort of argument for all that is Bitcoin. And you know, it goes through all of the different fallacies. They have there's a lot of different concepts that are incorporated into these 11 blog posts from Parker. Totally encourage you to read it and understand it. I'm gonna try to convince him to make this into a book or something, because it's really, really good. Okay, so if you haven't read that, please go do it. Then we have let me close this window. Your privacy is not guaranteed online. Introducing a framework for privacy and e-commerce via Bitcoin. So this is sort of a privacy-centric blog post about commerce and Bitcoin and using that as sort of like a pseudonymous way to shop and so on. A lot of people have thought about this. This is all in one place, which is nice. It is kind of a long article though. So if you want to take a look at, like, you know, the post and reading sort of the conclusions, you know, there's some good ideas in here that I would encourage you to go and read as well. All right. Lightning. All right, so Bitfinex put out this very interesting post last week, I guess early last week, integrating challenge of integrating the Lightning network. And it turns out, like, you know, the SimNet is really nice for doing development on it. And SimNet, if you don't know, is BTCD's sort of reg test. And it makes it very easy to go and do stuff like that. I guess this means that they're using LND and BTCD as well. So the big thing is that Lightning Network payments are not like any other payment method Bitfinex had previously integrated. Lightning Network has no blockchain or address, instead has new concepts like payment channels and invoices. And this is a critical thing, because and this is why, you know, Lightning integration is going to take some time for some people, is because it requires you to set up channels and so on. There's no address per se. There's a node that you have to pay to. And that's a very different concept than what we already have. And, you know, it says your Lightning is ready for prime time. The biggest challenge with integrating Lightning was learning and covering possible attack vectors, best practices, and quirks. And this is what I've been saying for a while, is that we don't really know that much about the security around Lightning or what the attack vectors will be and stuff. The sad reality of any kind of security is that you really only find out something doesn't work when it gets breached. In the meantime, you're just sort of guessing until, you know, something bad happens. And that's sort of a very pessimistic view of security, obviously. But that's really the only way to do things, is you try your best, and you have no proof that it's going to work. You just try it as best as you can. And over time, it gets better and better. And this is why it's so important that, you know, getting Lightning up and running now is a good idea, because you can kind of see what the attack vectors are and have a better idea of the security properties and what works and what doesn't. Don't simply assume default settings is good enough. Yeah, that's absolutely true. The development of Lightning Network is decentralized and works moves quick. And don't I know this? I've been trying to think about, I've been reading some of the Lightning spec and stuff, and it changes like all the time. And, you know, with Schnorr, it's going to change even more. Sighash no input, it's going to change even more. There's just so many ways in which Lightning keeps changing that I have a hard time like even trying to wrap my mind around the newer concepts and so on. So, you know, this is part where, you know, we really are at the bleeding edge of technology, where you have to kind of keep up if you are going to develop on Lightning. Hopefully it hardens a little more fairly soon, especially with Schnorr and Taproot and so on. But yeah, I mean, it's safe to say that Lightning is now deeply embedded in Bitfinex. So good article to take a look at, especially if you are thinking about integrating Lightning. It's the CTO of Bitfinex, Paolo Arduino, who gave this interview about Lightning. It gives you a little more color on what that whole post was about. So I encourage you to read that if you are so interested. All right, so let's take a look at my tweets and then I'll do my long read. Like I said, unfortunately, everything from last week's show just kind of got deleted. I don't know what happened with YouTube. I don't know, maybe I got caught in something. I have no idea. All right, this is Listen, that is the sound of 1,000 meth heads trying to salvage Ethereum. Yeah, the disaster that is Ethereum is just crazy. And that was, of course, like 2 days before the January 1st hard fork. So I wanted to just sort of subtweet that a little bit. That was the idea. 2020 predictions part two. Lots of altcoin delistings. IEOs will lose steam. Some coins will be 51% attacked and cause an exchange to lose lots of money. Coins will go down. Coin will go down less than 20%. More coins will change to be merge mined with Bitcoin. So, I suspect the last two points are sort of related, right? Like if your coin gets 51% attacked, the way to mitigate that is to merge mine with some other coin, and the best coin is Bitcoin. And if you give the miner some financial incentive, like the block reward for merge mining, then that's clearly a win for both of you. That said, it tends to lower the price of the coin quite a bit. Although I don't know, Dogecoin merge mined with Litecoin some years back, and they don't seem to have suffered that much. But then again, they're kind of a weird token. I do expect a lot more altcoin delistings, and that's just the reality. It's the cost of upkeep just doesn't make any sense. That said, I mean, Adam Back has pitched me on maybe some of these foundations can create a liquid token and then back them one for one with the token on their blockchain. That way it's costless for an exchange to list that token. I suspect maybe that might happen as well as a condition, but I suspect most will just be delisted because, I mean, like, there aren't really developers for a lot of these coins that are like 99% down now. IEOs will lose steam, and this is already happening. If you look at, even like the most successful ones, I think they're like Binance Token and Leo from Bitfinex. I mean, they've gone down significantly since their high. I suspect some of these other ones will go down even more, and I don't expect too many to happen. A lot of people are associating IEOs with ICOs, but who knows? We'll be seeing. All right, looking for good New Year's resolutions. Here are some suggestions: accumulate 6.15 BTC, stop taking on debt, take my course, Programming Blockchain, stop watching TV. Learn economics from safety.com. Stop reading the news. Read a book, Bitcoin book. Stop social media. And I tried to, and this was my most popular tweet this week. The idea is to stop doing something and then have something else as a goal. And I find that sort of associating the two helps me to focus and leave room for the new habit that I want to get into. Leave room for yourself, right? Like, take out some of the stuff that isn't really adding anything to your life, and that can be very helpful. By the way, I did post an article about Safdean's course. Excellent, excellent course. If you have it, if you don't know about Austrian economics or don't feel like you have a good enough foundation, or even if you do have a good foundation, I would totally, totally recommend taking the Econ 11 course. It's just presented in a very beginner-friendly way, but you get some really good concepts and it's logically deduced, and I would liken it more to philosophy than economics in many ways, because he does introduce concepts deductively from a logical perspective rather than here's some statistics and this is why, whatever. It's, which are all BS or whatever, talking about GDP and aggregate numbers and all this stuff that Keynesians tend to do. Very, very good stuff. All right, so this is a tweet storm that I did. Let me read the whole thing. The pernicious fact of life under central banking is that capital accumulation, saving, storing value is made difficult and requires a lot of time and effort. The only stores of value that are acceptable are stocks and real estate, both of which require a lot of research. This means time and effort are not going into new ideas in two different ways. Time and effort go into research about real estate or stocks, and there are less savers who are thinking about better ways to deploy their capital. As Safdean says, ideas are generated more under a sound money standard because savers are constantly thinking about useful ways to deploy their capital. Hard money means more savers, and more savers mean more new technologies and ideas. In a fiat system, ideas and technology are generally only deployed by the elite that have access to cheap capital, which then is protected by monopoly via patents and copyright. This is horrible for innovation. Innovation happens when people have capital that they can deploy. Ultimately, what causes real growth in civilization are good ideas. Modern fiat money disincentivizes new ideas and limits them to the elite. As usual, Bitcoin fixes this. Now, what do I mean by all this? Basically, the fiat system currently makes it so that only VC-approved startups get funding or whatever. It's fairly hard to start a new business or at least compete with the big businesses that are out there because they essentially have access to newly printed money via very cheap loans. So as a result, the only way to sort of break into the market are in many ways is through VC funding and startups and so on. And they only select for the elite, right? Like the people that have the right degrees or the right pedigree or whatever. And it's not a very good system. In a normal hard money system, there's lots of people that have a lot of savings that want to deploy their capital. And that in turn causes more ideas, right? If you have a bunch of capital, you can think of new ways to use it so you can make even more money. That's generally how people think when they have money, which is why they do so much research into real estate and stocks. But thing about real estate and stocks is that a lot of that research just kind of goes to waste. If you're doing research on real estate, the same another person that's looking to buy it, they're not going to reuse your research. Unless they happen to trust you. Most of the time, they're just going to do their own research. This is why, when you have a home inspection, each owner does their own, which kind of sucks. It's all wasted effort, right? Like it's you're not adding anything. You're doing this because you want to invest more money and so on. So, in many ways, this is one of the inefficiencies of the fiat system that we can take away through Bitcoin. All right, so that was that. What are the biggest lies of modern neo-Keynesian economics? This was obviously during taking the course. I wanted to see what interesting things people had to say. Governments create wealth, saving is bad, debt is good. Lots of really good responses, but yeah, it's just kind of sad how much of the Keynesian ideology just is sort of inherent in what we believe about economics. DeFi is turning into a central banking system right before our eyes. The creature outside looked from pig to man and from man to pig and from pig to man again, but already it was impossible to say which was which. It's funny that they call it DeFi because as far as I can tell, it's as centralized as any central bank. They keep a peg to the dollar by putting DAI on exchanges and trading it so that it stays at a dollar. I mean, that's exactly what a central bank does. They're incurring more systemic risk right now. I think something like 6% of Ethereum is now locked up in DeFi. If that peg breaks, Oh man, that's gonna be crazy. But there's a lot of systemic risk that they're putting into Ethereum as a result of doing this decentralized finance thing. So I'm kind of watching with a lot of popcorn. It's turning into a central banking system right before our eyes. That was the point of the tweet. All right, happy Genesis Block Day. And that's Python for printing the message that Satoshi hid in there. Sound money localizes downside, the entrepreneur fails, and globalizes the upside. Everyone gets the benefits of a new good or service. Fiat money localizes upside, rich get richer, and globalizes the downside, bailouts and inflation. And this is the asymmetry that is so pernicious today, is that rich people continue to get richer because they have access to cheap capital. Poor people get poorer because they don't. And the Cantillon effect of all of this money printing means that poor people just keep getting poorer and keep getting screwed. Whereas under a sound money system, like when you have an entrepreneur that's taking the risk, well, they take on the risk instead of rich people getting bailed out and so on. So in the end, it's a lot better for society if you have individuals taking risk instead of society taking the risk on behalf of rich people. Fiat, sticky prices and deflating savings. Bitcoin, deflating prices and sticky savings. Meaning that instead of prices staying constant, your savings stay constant. The savings are the more important thing. And deflating prices mean that savings has more purchasing power, which is a good thing over time. Instead, we're punishing savers by having sticky prices and depreciating dollar. Sunday survey: what do you plan to do with Bitcoin this year? Looks like most people want to accumulate instead of sell, trade, or hold. And that's to be expected. All right, this is a subtweet of credible neutrality as a guiding principle by Vitalik Buterin. I'm just pointing out you don't need credible neutrality unless you're a centralized party, right? Like, he's basically admitting that his coin is centralized. You need credible neutrality. Who needs credible neutrality in a decentralized system? Nobody. You don't need a neutral party. The only credible neutrality needed is as a third party. And yeah, I mean, it's that whole article read like, how I managed to get people to trust me and how I scammed all of these people and how you can too. That's exactly how that read. And sadly, that's what's going on Nakamoto.com. If you want to learn about economic aspect of Bitcoin, Safeteen has an excellent course. Like I said before, this is a really good course to learn Austrian economics, and I think it's fantastic value for, I think it's like $80 right now. I'm definitely signing up for the other one, Econ, I think 12 and 21 and a bunch of others. I mean, Safeteen's just a really good teacher. You might, have seen him on in different debates and so on, but he's just really good at what he does. So I would encourage you to go and look at that and just watch the videos and learn from him, because he really knows what he's talking about and he goes through it very rationally and logically. All right, let's do our long read now. Actually, let's see if there are any questions. What's your thoughts on the privacy rift CoinJoin has made against shitcoiners in 2019 and going forward post Schnorr Taproot? I mean, CoinJoin, I don't know if the anonymity set in a CoinJoin is sufficient. I mean, it depends on like the size of the transaction, and obviously the more people that join, the better it is. But until it's at least like 100, I don't know if it sufficiently hides you, because that's still within the realm of being able to be tracked and so on. But I mean, Schnorr, Taproot, that'll give us some level of secure or privacy, at least before you spend and so on. What things are, yeah. So I just interesting stuff that you really need to, you need to think about with privacy. I mean, the thing about privacy is that we really, and this is a little bit controversial, but what you need for privacy to really get good is for people to get exposed. You need an adversary, right? Like, you need somebody to push against in order to make the privacy stuff go forward. Right now, we're honestly not really in that state right now, right? Like, we don't have an adversary that's sort of pushing us or trying to, you know, track people down for Bitcoin or persecuting people and so on. Only then does the tech tend to come. Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. Right now, we're inventing without seeing a clear enemy. We don't know what tactics our adversary might use against us. I mean, there are certain people, maybe on the darknet and stuff like that. Obviously, people like Ross Ulbricht and so on, who are tracked down with certain transactions and so on. But it's not enough people that are being adversely affected that this tech can move forward. And until that happens, it's going to be hard to move this tech forward because necessity really is the mother of invention. All right, so let's take a look at this this story from Jamison Lopp. I want to go through some of the stats that he came out. Bitcoin obituaries claim per year. And it was a lot. It was something like 40. You know, I mean, compared to like 2017, it's not that many, but it's still kind of increasing. I guess less people are saying it now than before. I think they know the fate of all of these other people that have. Relative search interest remains high in developing countries. So South Africa, Ghana, Netherlands, Slovenia, Nigeria. Very interesting set there. Countries with the most relative interest. Nigeria, South Africa, Austria, Ghana, and Switzerland. Nigeria, it makes sense. The Naira, I think, versus the dollar. I think they'd much rather have the dollar. So being able to, there's a lot of remittances as well. So it makes a lot more sense. General interest in educational resources remain low. Daily visits to lop.net, Bitcoin. And that tends to trend based on, I guess, price and so on. And this is something that Antonopoulos told me is that no matter how many seminars he does or talks he does or YouTube videos he puts out, like the number of books he sells on Amazon only trends with price. That's the highest correlating trend that he's found. The rate of new subscribers to the rBitcoin subreddit slowed considerably after exchange rate dropped. Yeah, and this is to be expected. I'm not really sure how many people go to Reddit anymore. Google Scholar articles published mentioning Bitcoin, 13,700, which is a lot. So academic interest is booming. And I've seen that as well. Although, you know, there tends to be a lag on those things. So it might be research that was started 2 years ago. Funding and forking. Venture capital funding was down 18% year over year. From what I've heard, it's mostly due to cooling off of the blockchain solves everything hype. Yeah, so there was a lot more. There was more in 2018 than 2019. But that's because a lot of those funds started in 2017. But yeah, you're seeing the market work. You're seeing a lot of funds saying, oh, yeah, it doesn't make sense to invest in absolutely everything. And they're being a little more discerning. And there really honestly aren't that many good projects. So it takes a lot of due diligence and, yeah, and there just aren't as many. Red Hot ICO market crashed by 80% year over year. Funds raised via ICOs. Wow, that is insane. 2019 is even less than 2017. Absolutely crazy. Although BTC's exchange rate doubled over the course of the year, volatility was fairly low. The volatility, I mean, other than a few instances, it really hasn't moved that much in a day and so on. Bitcoin market cap dominance rose nearly 20%. Yes, and it's nearing 70. I predicted that it would reach 75. We'll see who's right. Let's see if I'm right, sorry. Daily on-chain Bitcoin transaction volume peaked at 20 billion a day, 10 times where it began 2019. Now it's around 2x, roughly mirroring the exchange rate movements. That makes sense. Daily on-chain transaction volume remained fairly flat in terms of BTC during 2019. Daily Bitcoin transaction outputs also generally trended along the exchange rate during 2019. So yeah, exchange rate tends to basically make all of these numbers go up, in other words. Transactions fees collected by miners saw some wide swings in 2019, averaging $100,000 a day during quiet periods, but spiking to $2 million a day during busy times. Yeah, it does, and that also probably correlates with price. Bitcoin address reuse declined in the second half after rising 12% over the last 18 months. So more people are using better practices. When SegWit 2019, Bitcoin transaction spending SegWit outputs increased another 20% this year. Now the majority of transactions spend SegWit outputs. And this is to be expected. It's been a couple years now. A lot of people know about it, and they're using it. ETX set growth went back to 2017 levels, reversing downward trend seen in 2018. So a lot of people consolidated after the big fee spike. I suspect that will happen again. Once fees start going up, people will consolidate again. But yeah, it's an oscillating trend. Bitcoin data anchoring. All right. Bitcoin op return outputs created in 2019. Way more this year. And this is mostly because of Veriblock, which is Jeff Garzik's company. And they were spamming testnet like crazy one time. But yeah, they've been, they're paying fees. So, you know, nothing you could do about that. OmniLayer was displaced by, as the most used op return protocol, as Veriblock created 57% of new op return outputs. And yeah, this is spamming the blockchain with 80 bytes at a time. But I mean, they're paying for it, so no biggie, I guess. The Bitcoin hash power that is merge mining the RSK smart sidechain increased from 40 to 57%. So RSK is quietly becoming the bigger merge mine thing on Bitcoin, basically. Amount of BTC pegged to liquid increased from 42 to 96. So not much in liquid, which is a little bit surprising. If you really do care about privacy, this would be, I think, the easiest way to get it. Although the anonymity set, I guess, is not that big. All right, let's see. Lightning Network. The network grew a ton in 2018, then grew even more during the first half of 2019 before pulling back slightly. So Lightning channels increased by 74%. And the Bitcoin in them increased. Number of cut channels increased. Density declined. Basically, it's a more sparse network and so on. Not as many connections per node. That's not a bad thing. It just means that the network is growing, and that's the number of possible connections grows at the square of the number of nodes. And density is based on the number of possible connections. It's the number of connections over the number of possible connections. Network security and health. The number of reachable nodes didn't fall much in comparison to reachable nodes. It dropped by 8%, which isn't very much. Total nodes fell 22%. It just not as much interest, I guess. Sharp drop in unreachable nodes makes sense if many of those newcomers to Bitcoin during the summer exchange rate spike who had installed Bitcoin Core to use as a wallet and then lost interest when the price fell. Yeah. Massive improvements in previous years. Bitcoin block propagation has settled at 435 milliseconds, which is really, really fast. Less than a second for blocks to get to the whole network, majority of the network. Hash rate. More than doubled, went from 40,000 exahash to 100,000, or 40 exahash to 100 exahash, ASICs keep getting better. Bitcoin blocks mined with over version rolling ASIC boost increased from 32 to 63%. So this makes sense. This is how what I expected from miners as version rolling became more and more prominent. They're essentially using it as non-space. That it makes all the sense in the world to use it, and that's a big advantage that you have instead of recomputing and so on. The amount of time it would take for an attacker with 100% of the current hash rate to rewrite the entire Bitcoin blockchain dropped by 100 days due to the accelerating hash rate in 2019, but has recovered half of that recently. This is the number of days if they had all of the current hash rate, all of the miners in the world, how long would it take for them to rewrite the entire Bitcoin blockchain to whatever they wanted? And it's something like 100 days. And, you know, it sounds like a lot, but it's, you know, like that's the amount of security we have, which is 100 days of the current hashing power to rewrite the whole thing. Bitcoin's thermodynamic security accelerated at an average rate of two terahashes per second squared. Okay. Interesting. In terms of general system ecosystem security, we've been doing a lot better than in early years. Security. These are the thefts. Percent of Bitcoin money support reported stolen. I wonder if in dollar terms that would be roughly the same. I should ask Jameson about that. All right, cost of node operation, 9 hours for Bitcoin, 20 hours for BTCD, an hour and 30 minutes for Bitcoin Core. Parity is 11 hours, LibBitcoin 7 hours, GoCoin 7 hours, so a lot. Let's see. Yeah, it went up from about 200 gigabytes to 250, but the annual growth rate is dropping, so the amount in gigabytes, I think, is about steady. Bitcoin's economic metrics were correlated with it. There was a spike in exchange. Everything correlates with price, basically. Transaction volume in terms of BTC remained rather flat. UTXOs consumed appear to be uncorrelated with Bitcoin's exchange rate. Okay, that's one thing that's not. Bitcoin is, as an M1 money, is $132 billion, which is between UAE and Turkey. Interesting. From a relative historical standpoint, the overall change in exchange rate was mediocre. On a per day basis, it was like 0.18%. Bitcoin trading. Local Bitcoin's trading volume was generally flat, which is interesting. Although the high inflation countries saw a lot more volume in fiat terms. Bitcoin ATMs increased. Bitcoin trading volume was fairly flat. BitMEX insurance fund. Wow, that grew a lot. I guess there's a lot more leveraged traders. $20 billion got liquidated on BitMEX. 20% increase since last year. I'm hearing a lot of people in Korea are going on BitMEX and gambling that way instead of using ICOs. Lots and lots of commits to Bitcoin Core, to over 2,000. LND, Seed Lightning. Pretty much everything else is like modest. That's sort of like the year in review in terms of statistics. Thank you, Jameson, for writing that article. Let me see if there are any questions before I show more stuff. An argument, do you think BTC pump has anything to do with proof of keys event? Good question. I'm not really sure. I suspect that it's a new year and there are probably funds that had allocations that come in on the new year, and based on that they buy a bunch of stuff. Or they need to rebalance their portfolios or something like that, and put more into Bitcoin and so on. I'm guessing that's part of it, from sort of like a tax year perspective, but it could be the proof of keys event as well. An argument I've heard for ETH is decentralized lending, because that kind of smart contract can't be done on BTC. But I would argue that you can do it on a sidechain pegged to Bitcoin. Do you agree? Of course, yeah. You can do that on RSK if you wanted to. The thing is, you need a trusted centralized party, so it's not really decentralized lending. The whole reason why MakerDAI works is because they have a peg to the DAI, which gets lent out in dollars. And if that peg breaks, if there isn't a central party managing that peg, again, this is exactly like a central bank, then none of this works. None of it works. And of course, they have a kill switch to settle everything if something goes horribly awry, which, you know, if the peg broke, that's exactly what would happen. So, I mean, you have to trust a third party. So it's not really decentralized lending. So it's, you know, no better than fiat, really. So those are the two questions. So, all right, let's see. Let's go to the desktop. Again, my book, Programming Bitcoin, is available on Amazon for $41, even though the, you know, I think the retail price is like $70. So very good. Good deal there. A little Bitcoin book, 11.39 on paperback, 8.99 on Kindle, 5.99 on audiobook. It's very, very good reviews. All right, Programming Blockchain is coming to Las Vegas February 20th and 21st. And this is in conjunction with Tone's conference, Unconfiscatable, which is happening February 20th to 23rd at the D Hotel in Las Vegas. Very nice hotel. We're going to have a carnivory dinner and all kinds of other stuff. If you are interested, I would encourage you to attend. There's a lot of people that are coming, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's in February this time, though, so yeah, please attend. All right, the other conference that I am going to be at, which I just bought plane tickets for, is Advancing Bitcoin London. And this is going to be February 6th and 7th. This is going to be a lot more developer focused. I'm on there. Lots of other people are on there. Lots of really good developers, and it's going to be a fun time. So if you are a developer and are getting started, this is the conference to go to. All right, so that is about it. Once again, please pound that like button and subscribe if you haven't, so you could be notified. It's a new year. It looks like it's off to a roaring start with Bitcoin being off something like $700 in a few days. So very exciting stuff. We are going to come into a halving in about 4 or 5 months. So really good stuff. Let's hope this holds, or, you know, honestly, I'd actually like to see shitcoins go down even more before we do any sort of recovery. But what happens is what happens. So anyway, hope all of that helped you. This song is done.